Welcome, and thank you for joining us on This Week in State Tax, also known as TWIST. My name is Harley Duncan, and I'm with the state and local team in KPMG's Washington National Tax Office. This is the fourth in our monthly podcast series that we are using to augment our Monday morning regular TWIST publication. Today, we will be discussing how the voters disposed of a variety of tax-related ballot measures that we judge to be of significant interest to the business community in about 10 different states. Our guest is Jasmine Desai, a manager in our Washington National Tax State and Local Group for the last 6 years. Jasmine primarily focuses her attention on complex multi-state income tax issues, but she also became our ballot watcher this year. Welcome to TWIST, Jasmine. Before the election gets too far in the rearview mirror, let's see what the voters had to say about state taxes. Would you like to start our discussion with some of the measures that won approval in Colorado, Georgia, and a couple of interesting local matters in California?
Sure, Harley. Thank you for having me today. So to start off, in Colorado, voters approved Proposition KK by 54%, and it was a levy of 6.5% of excise tax on the manufacture and sale of firearms and ammunition, which would go into effect on April 1st, 2025. This year, California was the first state to levy an additional tax on the sale of firearms and ammunition, which took effect in July of 2024. Also in Georgia, voters approved Constitutional Amendment 2 by 52%, which will create a Georgia tax court as part of the Georgia judicial system. Up until now, Georgia has a tax tribunal that could review tax matters, but was not part of the judicial system. The benefits of having a tax court are that it will have statewide jurisdiction and any appeals can be made directly with the state court of appeals. The tax court judges will be appointed by the governor with approval by the Senate and House Judiciary Committees. Finally, a number of localities within California have had various initiatives which were approved by voters. I just wanted to highlight a couple of those. In Santa Cruz, voters approved Measure Z, which imposes a general tax on the distribution of sugary beverages. We have seen many state and local efforts to tax sugary beverages for many years now, and continue to see these efforts over recent years. San Francisco imposes different gross receipts-based taxes that are always a concern for businesses doing business in the city of San Francisco. This year, Proposition L received 56% of votes in support of creating yet another gross receipts tax on ride-hail business activities that would begin on or after January 1, 2025. However, Proposition L would take effect depending on the number of votes Proposition M received. Because Proposition M was approved by 70% of voters, Proposition L failed because it received less votes of approval than Proposition M. So what is Proposition M? Proposition M consists of an array of amendments to the current gross receipts taxes in San Francisco. Proponents of the Proposition M argue that the initiative is an attempt to make the city more business friendly and reduce revenue dependence on its biggest employers. Though there appeared to be more than a year-long effort to negotiate the language of Proposition M, this measure demonstrates a significant legislative making power being put in the hands of citizens rather than the representatives they elected into office.
All right. Well, thank you, Jasmine. I'm going to step in and give Jasmine a chance to catch her breath, and I'm going to cover some ballot measures approved in Illinois, Nevada, and Wyoming. So Illinois does not provide for traditional initiative and referendum process as it pertains to state laws, but the legislature can, by a simple majority of each house, submit a non-binding advisory question to the voters. Last year, the legislature approved submitting a question of whether the Illinois Constitution should be amended to create an additional 3% tax on incomes of over $1 million per year, that funding to be used to provide local tax relief. The advisory was approved by 60% of the voters. The next step is likely to be up to the state legislature then as to whether to consider a constitutional amendment that would authorize the 3% levy, and then that amendment, again, if approved by the legislature, would go to the voters at a subsequent election. If you're wondering about why a constitutional amendment and a tax rate, Illinois has a strict uniformity clause, and you cannot differentiate the rate of tax on a similar type of income. So in Nevada, another unique law requires that amendments to the state sales and use tax require approval by both first the state legislature and then by the voters. As a result, there was a legislatively approved amendment to provide an exemption for child and adult diapers that was on the ballot in November. It was approved by 64% of the voters, so that going forward, there will be an amendment, an exemption from the sales and use tax for the purchase of child and adult diapers in Nevada. And the last one for me, in Wyoming, we had about 60% of the voters approve an amendment to the state constitution, adding residential real property as a separate class of property for tax purposes. The amendment also authorizes the legislature to then establish a subclass of residential property that's called owner-occupied property. The effect of the amendment will be to allow the legislature to authorize a lower assessment rate for owner-occupied residential property than is the case for other residential and other really non-mineral and non-industrial property. So the effect in the end is a lower effective tax rate on owner-occupied residential real estate, presuming the legislature proceeds to enact that into law. It is now authorized in the state constitution. I think that wraps up the measures that were approved by the voters. There are also several significant measures that were disapproved and rejected by the voters. Jasmine, would you like to bring us up to date then and tell us what went on in North Dakota, Oregon, South Dakota, and Washington State?
Sure, Harley. So in North Dakota, voters opposed Measure 4 by 63%, which would have prohibited states and locality from imposing any tax on a value of real and personal property. Creating a measure like this would have reduced state and local revenues by $1.3 billion per year. The problem with this measure was that it only included the property tax prohibition, but it's leaving to the legislature to deal with how to deal with the reduced revenue and exactly how to do that. So top of mind for many businesses this year was ballot measure 118 from Oregon. This measure was rejected by a resounding majority of voters, specifically 78%. It would have significantly increased the tax being imposed on corporations doing business in Oregon by drastically revising the minimum tax and dedicating the proceeds to providing a basic universal income program for all Oregon residents. Oregon is a state with a pretty high tax rate, as you may know, and the disruption caused by this measure would have been detrimental to large businesses. In the end, the measure was opposed by a broad coalition of businesses and labor and consumer groups. Measure 118 is a prime example of trying to overhaul the tax system through a ballot initiative. In South Dakota, voters rejected the creation of a state sales and use tax exemption for items that were sold for human consumption, except alcohol and prepared foods. There's a variety of concerns with this proposal, including the potential revenue impacts, as well as it was drafted in a manner that would have exempted nicotine products from the tax. And then finally, in another attempt to overhaul the taxing scheme in Washington state, Initiative 2109 would have repealed the capital gains tax, which was enacted by the state legislature in 2021. Currently, the tax is a 7% tax, but excludes real estate gains and applies only to gains in excess of $270,000 annually. This initiative was rejected by 63% of voters.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Jasmine. We really appreciate you joining us today, and we hope to have you on again in the future. As I look through what happened with these measures, I had two distinct takeaways from the outcome. First, it really is difficult to radically overhaul a state and local tax system through the ballot box, as I think you can see in North Dakota and Oregon, and to some extent in South Dakota and Washington state as well. Ballot initiatives tend to be a fairly blunt instrument when it comes to dealing with complex matters such as tax reform. Dealing with tax reform often requires trade-offs among various instruments, and that's just really difficult to accomplish in a ballot initiative. Second takeaway, the issue of real property taxes, I think, will continue to be front and center, particularly in states in the upper Midwest, the Mountain West, where property values have generally risen quite rapidly, and those states and localities primarily rely quite heavily on the property tax relative to other sorts of taxes, particularly at the local level, and then relative to other parts of the country as well. I think you can see this in the ballot measures in Wyoming, where it was a rather targeted amendment aimed at owner-occupied real estate. And in North Dakota, where you said the proposal was, let's do away with all property taxes. If you kind of look at a bunch of legislative activity recently in Nebraska, Idaho, Colorado, among some other states in that area, you really see the focus on property taxes, largely due to rising property values. I don't expect this to abate at all. So thank you. We hope you keep joining us on our Twist podcasts and look for our Monday morning publication each week.